Yeah, you were great. You were great. Good to meet Paul. Radical view.
Why has anyone truly come from a poor background in this room? Anybody? I haven't. I don't know if anyone else has. No? Yes? No? No one? Okay. I've had in my life times where I've had very, very little money. Various times. Very little money. In fact, I'll tell you one little story where I was travelling with my, not this wife that I have now, previous one. I've had two. And we were travelling in southern Victoria. And this is, we're talking in the mid-70s. And we were living on pretty much $5 a day, $5 a day. And times were different then. And we got to a point... Oh, wife, child, dog. Petrol. Now, admittedly, the wages were different then, but $5 was still very, very lean, okay? I think petrol was about 40 cents a litre. So you could buy a bit of petrol and... Anyway. We got to the point where we were really, really running short on money. And we were driving in country Victoria, and we went and we were driving along. We saw a farmer picking potatoes. So we went over and we said, could we buy a dollar's worth of potatoes? And he looked at us and he went, yeah, he just picked up a sack and gave it to us. So then we had enough money for a block of cheese. And it's surprising how you can have potatoes and cheese and potatoes, potatoes and cheese and potato. It kind of worked, except for the dog. He was seriously unimpressed. We'd put the cheese and potato in a bowl and he'd look at it and look at us like, you've got to be kidding. So it was kind of interesting. It was never a worrying situation because my family were reasonably middle class and I knew that if I really got into strife, they'd bail me out. So it was never a situation where I was living on the breadline. But it was a bit touch and go. And in those days, it was difficult to get money sent around and wired and whatever. So it was a little bit difficult, but it was never a real life and death situation. It's interesting to note that in Bangladesh, which is the kind of... it's an area that's very poor, but they still have sheltering food and water, shelter, food and water. So in a sense, it's poor, but it's not, we're not talking famine. They've actually measured that they've, in a quota, that they're the happiest people in the world, per capita, I mean, that they actually have an enjoyable life. But partly that's not necessarily due to the lack of wealth, which is contradicting being poor and happy. It's that the society is actually quite stable. That they know what's happening, they know where the food's coming from, they haven't got a lot of it, but there's enough to feed. So just enough actually is the point. And they've done a survey where they found this interesting bell curve where absolute poverty is really quite suffering, where you don't have any food and you're not, you know, that's really difficult. And that poverty is very, very, very difficult for people. Then it goes up to where people have food, water, clothing and shelter. And if that's consistent and it's not erratic, then happiness goes up extraordinarily. So from someone that has nothing to that standard of living, even if it may not be luxurious, that's actually quite happy. Then it increases, interestingly enough, and we're talking now in Western society, up to about $120,000. And at $120,000, it starts to level out as we're getting higher, $150,000, $200,000, $300,000. When we get to about $1 million a year, it starts to decline very rapidly into unhappiness. Why do you think that would be? Pressure? Absolutely, pressure. The difficulties of maintaining large amounts of money becomes a real burden. During the financial crisis, there was a guy I knew whose friend lost half of his money. He lost $400 million. He had $400 million left. And he was really stressed and freaked out because he had geared his life up to an $800 million lifestyle. And all of a sudden, if you think of yourselves, if you took away half all your money, it becomes difficult. Now we think, oh, well, he's got $400 million left, what's his problem? But for him, he lived at an $800 million lifestyle. And then half is gone, he started to panic. So it's not the amount. We know that in Buddhism. It's not the amount of money, it's the attitude towards it. And so if you're having a lot of pressure maintaining more and more money, then it becomes more and more difficult. We look at people like Gina Rinehart, who's just recently said she's now the richest woman in Australia by how many billion? 9 billion or something? I don't know, something like that, huge amount. She's just made a statement in the papers in the last day or so. She said they should lower the minimum wage, and that will make people work harder and get more money. Which is an unbelievably unfair thing to say for a woman that's got $9 billion. There are people that are stuck in jobs that's the only job that they can get, and that's the way that they can have keep their families together, and that's all there is. And that also can be stressful, but at least they have an income and a job. So it's not about rich versus poor. You know, you can have just enough money and be very happy, and you can have too much and be extraordinarily unhappy. One client of mine I had, this is a massage client I had, was absolutely furious when she flew in from England, first class, $16,000 ticket, and just behind first class was a woman with a baby that cried. How could the airline do this to her? She was in a seat that cost her $16,000, and her sleep was interrupted because in the poor seats there was a baby. She was going to complain to the airline and write a very nasty letter that this shouldn't happen. So her happiness, her luxury, became her torture. Now, if you fly the way I do in planes, which is like this, you put up with a crying baby, don't you? Because that's the way it is. There's no lower class than where I sit. So you can't send the baby further down the back of the plane because that's where I'm sitting. And so you go, well, that's the way it is. And sometimes that resignation stops all the panic. But when you think, it should, you know when you get that terminology, it should, I should not have to put up with this, it becomes torture. I will say something, I hope this lady never hears this report, but when she had her divorce, and she and her husband were worth about 160 mil, when she got her divorce she got 80 million, she sent out a request, which her husband publicised to all the friends. Her expenses per year was $250,000 for travel per year, $125,000 a year for clothes, $12,000 a year for handbags, and you'll like this one, $600 a year presents for friends. He thought that was hysterical. So you could say she had a bit of a problem. And really, I actually felt sorry for her. Genuinely sorry for her. I thought she had a really difficult time dealing with that kind of wealth. People also took various views about people who are extremely wealthy. Particularly, the worst place to be is wealthy and famous. I think then you do have a lot of problems. Look at all the Hollywood stars besieged by paparazzi. And it depends whether you think that having that fame is going to be happiness or not. I think if you ask some of the... in fact, I remember one quote from one Hollywood star. He said, "The only thing fame has done for me is got me a better seat in a restaurant." He said, "The rest has done nothing for my life." In fact, he said, "It's been more unhappiness being famous than it was when I was anonymous." So we're looking at rich, poor, we're looking at fame, recognition, and all those things that we think that if we're going to get more,